Hello, this is Speedball Mike Bailey from Impact Wrestling. You're listening to Wrestle In.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Flight of Five, the podcast of wrestling top five lists. As always, I'm your host from the Legion of Doom Scrolling, Ryan Dilbert, and I'm joined today by What Culture presenter, writer, editor, just about everything over there, Mr. Andy H. Murray. Welcome on, Andy.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always fun to kind of invade someone else's podcast space and talk crap about wrestling for a little bit. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Talk crap about wrestling might be our new motto. Put it on a t-shirt. Yeah.
It's kind of my life. So, you know, the opportunity to do it a bit more to my tastes and to not have to worry about, you know, WWE and all the big picture topics is really awesome. Had a lot of fun with Kieran talking about Tom Ish the other month. So this is going to be a good time.
Yeah, that might be a teaser for the rest of the list. And that is a really good episode. If you're listening to this and you haven't heard Kieran and Andy talk about and learn about. And so Kieran, I can't remember. He is the noob and you are the enthusiast. Am I right?
It was kind of sort of, but we're both obviously like very big on Tomohiro Ishii, so it was kind of, we basically threw the format of the podcast away and just fanboyed out for an
hour. That's
it was
right. Weird,
but it was fun.
Yeah, that threw me off a little bit, but yeah, both exploring and celebrating Big Tom. Before we get into the list, I had a thought. It's very far from wrestling, so in my mind, you are a must follow on Twitter, Andy H. Murray, for wrestling fans, but with the caveat that you will see a lot of tweets about Scottish football if you follow Andy. So can you just maybe educate us a bit about Aberdeen? Like, where do they sit in the hierarchy of the league? Is this, if I were to follow them and root for them, am I getting my heart broken, or are they one of the best? Like, where do I start?
So, yeah, I mean, if you were to adopt Aberdeen Football Club as your team right now, actually, really, any time over the past 30 years, yeah, you're signing up to heartbreak and disappointment. 40 years ago, that would not be the case. Aberdeen, at one point, before I was alive, unfortunately, were one of the best football teams in the world. We won the European Cup Winners' Cup, beating Real Madrid in the final in Gothenburg in 1983. Sir Alex Ferguson, of course, who went on to become a legend with Manchester United in the 90s, and he was our manager and all of this. But ultimately, when you're of a smaller market and your legendary manager departs, a slow, depressing decline commences. And basically for the past 20, 30 years, Aberdeen have been at best the third team in Scotland, which is kind of a two-team duopoly of Glasgow Celtic and Rangers, the two big clubs, and there's a giant gap between them and everyone else. Aberdeen tend to veer somewhere between the third best team in the country and like the 10th. So it's never dull. The quality of the football isn't what it used to be. The success isn't there. We haven't won a trophy since 2014, and that was the first one in like 12 years or something like that as well. You don't sign up to Aberdeen for success. You sign up for the ride and the weird array of strange and colorful characters that populate the Scottish Premier League, which is, in my view, the best league in the world, not for its quality, but because it's completely insane and unhinged. It's like it's like the GCW of football leagues. It's completely unhinged, and that's why I love it. But yeah, I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, you're getting 90% wrestling, which you might gravitate towards, and then 10% obscure music and football, which you're probably going to unfollow me for. So it's a balance.
Okay, well, I'm glad I asked. I'm more intrigued with all the GCW analogy. That is that's intriguing. I mean, because it was, as we call it, soccer here, football. There's just so many good leagues. Like, someone asked me what the best one was, and I was like, I'm not the expert on that, but it's not as clear as some sports where there's like, obviously the NBA is like far and away the top. But I do like the idea of colorful, crazy characters. in my sport. So, okay, you may have won me over. Excellent. So our topic today is near and dear to my heart, but I think it is to Andy's as well. Our top five favorite Haas wrestlers. And I definitely struggled with this one in part because, surprise, surprise, overthinking. But I started thinking, what is even a Haas? Like, is it a size thing? Is it a look thing? Is it a style? And I put people on the list and said, oh, they're not actually a Haas. And took them off and then put them on. So let's start with that, Andy. What is a Haas?
I think it's a state of mind more than a physical thing, because, you know, there are the traditional definition of a Haas way, way, way back when would be your gigantic, large human being who throws their weight around. And there is still an element of that. But with the evolution of wrestling, I think, and smaller wrestlings working more diverse styles and, you know, giants and so forth, not being, I think giant in its own is its own distinct style, but with the kind of shrinking of the average size of wrestlers, which I think is broadly good, you can have a smaller wrestler like a Tomohiro Ishii, who, spoiler alert, is not on my list just because of the definition, but you could realistically classify that man as a horse. You could classify him as a horse as well, because he works really hard. Uh-huh. But I think it is, you know, that kind of, even if you aren't necessarily the biggest, an element of size is obviously important. Like, you can't be built like Nick Wayne, bless him, and classify yourself as a horse. No disrespect to Nick Wayne, I think he's extremely talented.
But he wouldn't call himself that.
No, definitely not. But if you stand firm, you're strong, you're imposing, you carry yourself with like this just unbreakable kind of character and aura, I think. Realistically, as long as you're not like, you know, a little skinny dude, I think if you're of even just an average size, if you're of that mindset, you can classify yourself as a Haas.
I like that you said that state of mind, because that makes me feel better about some of my picks, because some of them are a bit smaller. And I felt like I was cheating, but I had the same thought, like, if you act like a Haas, if you carry yourself, then that counts. I think he's not on my list, but Shingo, being both a cruiserweight and a Haas, in a sense, is a very, very interesting thing. Like, when he was in the, you know, the cruiserweight tournament, I'm going to work a little faster, a little, you know, more high energy. And then the G1, I'm going to slow it down. I'm going to beat you up, because yeah, I'm turning on the Haas mentality. And he seems bigger depending on who he's against, which helps one of my list guys as well.
Shingo's a great guy to bring up, because then you can go back to his Dragon Gate days, where he was, you know, twice the size of everyone he was facing, and they were bouncing off of him. So like, their environment definitely matters as well. It's you could really break this down for the full hour, couldn't you?
Instead of a list, we're gonna just talk about the definition of of us. We could do that. Yeah, size is relative. You know, some people consider me very tall. I'm like 6'2". And when I was in China for school and work a long time ago, I mean, I felt like a large man. I felt so big. But then I go play basketball with my buddies, and I'm like the smallest guy. So it's a state of mind. It's relative. So I'm very curious. You did not put Big Tom on there. Hint of what's to come or not to come. But what about honorable mentions? Anybody didn't quite make the list you want to just shout out first?
Yeah, absolutely. So my day job, I cover mostly American wrestling. So I've got a couple of my favorites to watch on a week-to-week basis in my 9-to-5 hours that I love, but just couldn't quite find a space for them. So Powerhouse Hobbs, I think, incredibly fun guy to watch. Particularly, you know, his improvement over the past couple of years has shot him into contention in this category for me, even if he still, you know, still has a way to go, but that's part of the fun. Keith Lee's another one. I think responsible for redefining kind of the modern idea of a big man wrestler, where being the big lumbering stiff isn't quite as effective as it used to be. He obviously, in his pomp before he had his health troubles and stuff, was just a ridiculous freak athlete, and he's still got those bursts in him, but he's perhaps had to adapt a little bit. Love those guys from Japan, and the Japanese Hoss style is absolutely my favorite. But Yuji Hino, personal favorite of mine.
Yes.
I love that bloke, him crossing over into DDT in the past couple of years, which is my favorite promotion to watch outside of work, because I mean, I can watch him basically every week. It's great. Shuji Ishikawa, if we were compiling this a couple of years ago, would have been right up there.
Yeah.
Big dog, maybe not quite what he used to be between the ropes, which is a shame, but time comes for everyone. But yeah, what a remarkable guy and pro wrestler he's been. And Chihiro Hashimoto as well, someone I don't get to watch as much. Well, let me rephrase that. I don't watch as much as I should, because when you cover wrestling for a living, it's very difficult to then go home and watch every single thing in your own time as well. You'll become burned out and crazy. But every time I tune into her, I'm very much impressed. And yeah, those would be my most obvious honorable mentions. But really, I mean, this is like my favorite style of wrestling. I could go for days.
It definitely is one of my subgenres, the top of the list. I'm really glad you mentioned Yuji Hino. A guy that is like not that big, but the kind of the way he is built his Hoss and ways, and then he definitely works that style. Hard hitting, kind of simple offense. If you haven't watched Yuji Hino, let's put that on your watch list as you go through. If you haven't heard some of these wrestlers, we will we'll get you going. We'll get you rolling. You can get all your Hoss fill. My honorable mentions, I wanted to mention Micah from Stardom, the enforcer, the bodyguard, the muscle of Donna Del Mundo. She is getting higher and higher on my list. Last year she was quite good and got these big opportunities in the main event. And she just hits so hard and she's so nasty. A big fan of that. And I wanted to also mention Big E, I didn't put him on because he doesn't work like a Hoss sometimes. I mean, he has the size, he has the power. I think in part WWE's in his head, like, hey, we want you to be funnier or, you know, lighter, work lighter. But if you could put Big E in Big Japan or Big E in DDT, which is never going to happen, but I think you would see this, like, vicious slugfest side of him, and I would love to see that. But you know, I'm sure he's happy, he's making a lot of money, he's not getting as beat up as he would in those scenarios. So wanted to throw him out, but didn't quite make my five. Let's head to the real list, and we have not seen each other's lists, so could be some overlap, could be the same exact list, who knows. Andy, let's start with your number five.
All right, so my number five is maybe a bit of a vanity pick, because I love this dude. He's part of my favorite tag team, big personal favorite. Pick that would probably surprise a lot of people, unless they follow me, in which case it will surprise absolutely nobody. The Butcher from AEW. I adore this guy. I adore him and the Blade as a tag team. So my wrestling, so a bit of context, my wrestling comfort food is mid-80s, Jim Crockett, Mid-Atlantic. I love putting those shows on the network, the old World Championship Wrestling shows, zoning out, listening to the great promos, these angry men spitting down the microphone, watching these emphatic squash matches. My favorite tag team of all time are the Road Warriors, which tells you a lot about my taste. Obviously, they're not going out there and having like the 20-minute classics. They're kicking dudes' heads in, and then they're shouting down the microphone, and they're talking about setting a dude's face on fire and putting it out with an axe and all that cheesy stuff. I love all that stuff. And to me, the Butcher and the Blade, they're obviously not as high profile. They're a mid-level tag team in AEW. They're probably never going to be pushed beyond that level, but I don't really care, because to me, their act registers somewhere between the Road Warriors, Mad Max, and Escape from New York. They're simple, they're a little cheesy, and they're totally awesome. They do these promos where they stand there looking like they're out of a metal video, telling people to dial 1-800-SEE-YA because their ass is grass and they're going to smoke them up. They have an incredible aesthetic, and they beat the snot out of people. The Butcher in particular, like, I think his story, and this is something that draws me to him, because I like wrestlers that have a cool backstory and like a real life thing you can invest in, like a lot of us do. And his story is so unique from you know, playing in Every Time I Die. And I remember seeing like Every Time I Die footage in like the mid-2000s and seeing this massive hulking guitar player swinging this instrument around. And I'm like, holy crap, this guy should be a pro wrestler. And then years and years later, my first experience of him in pro wrestling was he was facing a wrestler who I won't name because of recent events in Bloodsport. And they mentioned Andy Williams. And I was like, hold on, is that... Oh, it's the Every Time I Die guy. What the hell is this? Huh. So I get to the ring and he's got the mustache and the monocle and all of this stuff. And he's throwing dudes around. He's this gigantic muscled up dude. Now he's in his 40s and Every Time I Die is sadly no longer together. But he's transitioned into this full-time wrestling career in his mid-40s. And I think that's a really cool story. He's probably lived one of the most interesting lives of anyone on the planet. A guy who's clearly put a lot of work into his wrestling act. Like he's leaned out a lot in the last couple of years. He's improved considerably, like in terms of like footworking and basic placement. Like you watch a Butcher and the Blade match, you're not going to get your high tech state of the art, you know, Young Bucks versus Death Triangle or whatever. But that's not what they're aiming for. They're aiming for a different kind of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I love this dude. I love the aesthetic. I love the energy. I think it's an incredible story. Lord knows how long he's going to be wrestling for, given he's already in his mid-40s.
Yeah.
One of my absolute favorite guys to watch. And I really love the opportunity to just pour over people subjectively.
And you're right about his look, his vibe. It is late 80s. Like he could very much fit in a Crockett Promotions time warp if he had to be thrown back. That's a good pick. This is not one where we're like, is he a Haas or not a Haas? He has the size, he has the look, he has the style. unequivocally, big Haas man in there. Okay, Butcher next. I went with number five. That is someone you already mentioned, and Chihiro Hashimoto, who gets bonus points for her Haas style nickname. She goes by Big Hash. Well, the internet gave her that name and then she accepted it. So that's even better. The sort of the centerpiece of Sendai Girls as their part of the best tag team. She's their best singles wrestler. And she's so good at overpowering people. She's the biggest and the strongest person on that roster. So she has to play the Goliath of the David pretty much almost every time. And that is her comfort zone. That is her jam. It's a very hard hitting, easy to get into style too. There was a recent holiday break where I was just watching stuff on YouTube, and Sendai Girls has a lot of stuff on YouTube, by the way. If you are not familiar and you're like, oh, I don't know where to start, just pull up the channel and they put full matches, like almost all of their shows. It's 2 months after the fact, but it's on there. But anyway, I'm putting on all this stuff and my sister walks in the room, who's a very casual wrestling fan. And she's like, who's that lady? Who's like beating the hell out of the other one. And she was very intrigued. It's a very complicated style. You can get into it very easily. So Big Hash, my number five.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan as well. Like I say, like, one of those wrestlers that simply because I don't keep up with Sendai Girls like I do places like Stardom and Tokyo Joshi Pro, just as a time thing more than anything else. Yeah. But every single time I watch her, I think the first Big Hash match I saw was against Meiko Satomura, maybe like 2017-ish. And from there, it's just, and then the matches with Sarray and various other people over the years. She's tremendous, very striking style, like you say, very, very easy to get into, stands out in her own lane. Absolutely fun. Yeah, I love her.
And I would also recommend watching her tag work with you, not you, Andy, but YUU. Team 200 kilograms. They're both hosses, and their whole like pose is they just flex their muscles right in front of you. Like that says a lot. So we got two tag team wrestlers right to there. Start with. Yes, yes. We are hosses. Look at us. Let's head to your number four then.
All right. So kind of a tag team wrestler as well, but also singles wrestler. Number four, I've gone for Yuji Okabayashi, who... So I explained this with Kieran for like an hour, but my favorite wrestler of all time is Tomohiro Ishii. I love the hardness, the gruffness, the fighting spirit, the way he conveys a sense of struggle, mm-hmm. pulls you into this gritty, painful, emotional battle in his matches. Yuji, to me, evokes similar feelings, albeit in his own kind of way. He's a little less stoic and a lot more expressive, and that's what drew me to him in the first place. This guy, as well as being, you know, he's one of these classic guys, similar to Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Hino as well, where he's like almost as wide as he is tall. So as soon as you see the dude, you're like, what the hell? What's this guy been eating? I love it. But like physically, he's this ball of whatever energy he is trying to convey at the time, whether he's working on top, dominating a smaller wrestler, or he's making a spirited comeback, clutching an arm injury and fighting through it. Mm-hmm. His comebacks are incredible. He's got fighting spirit for days. He's one of, for me, he was a really great wrestler to get into when I was first exploring independent Japanese wrestling away from New Japan, which was how I got into Puro in the first place. He is so accessible. I think you could put Okabayashi in front of any crowd in the world that appreciates wrestling for wrestling, mm-hmm. and he would get over. If you put him in an AEW ring and let him just grunt and roar and scream and power up for 2 minutes, they will be chanting his name in an instant. This guy transcends any kind of barriers you can think of. Incredibly simple style, again, torture racks, big splashes, just charging back and forth, barreling into people. But it is that expressiveness that I think makes him stand out above some of his peers. It's just so much fun to watch. His energy is so infectious that for me, it's impossible to look away whenever he's on. I first came across him probably mid 2010s. It was when Kamatani beat him for the Big Japan Strong Championship for the first time. And he's playing a different role in that match. He's putting the next guy up over and all of that. Yeah. But exploring his catalog, and then that year where him and like Shingo and Yuji Hino and a bunch of other dudes went over to All Japan and worked the Champion Carnival. It was like, I was like a kid in a candy store for horses that year. But Yuji's he's just so much fun to watch. And his energy, if you could bottle that and sell it, you'd be a billionaire. The guy's incredible.
Absolutely. Spoiler alert, he is on my list higher up, but so we'll talk very briefly about him then, but let's jump in now. One of the things I really like about Okabayashi is that, like you mentioned, his like wideness, like the barrel chest, the bald head, his face, like the whole look is intimidating. Like you could just see him walk up and be like, all right, that guy's gonna kick some ass. No question. And there's like a realness to his work and intensity. I mean, because he's working super heavy and he's going to hurt you and hurt himself. The Big Japan stuff is kind of harder to find. But last year, he was in the DDT tournament. And to me, he was the MVP of that whole event. So that's easier to find if you want to take a look and explore what Andy's talking about. Just watch any of those matches from last year. Oh, like I'm just now I'm like, screw my plans for today. I'm just gonna go back and watch Yuji versus Higuchi, Yuji versus all the others. Higher on my list because everything you said, but even more. Like I'm enamored with his style, and that is definitely my jam. You know, we talked about state of mind. He has the state of mind of a Haas, but he's not like that tall, right? So maybe in certain environments he wouldn't come off as a Haas. You know, if he's facing Calvin Tankman, he's playing a different role. But in Japan, where the average height is a little smaller, he comes off like an apex predator, a big beast. So he's in the right place. It's the excellent environment for him. Okay, got a little pumped up there, Okabayashi. Let's head
hard not to.
WWE surprise for myself, And I have number four, Gunther. He'd be higher if it was Walter. It'd be higher if he was still fat and big. He lost that weight. He lost something with me. So I just have to come to terms with this. This is the reality. This is the new Gunther. I can't even say the name Gunther. It's still Walter to me, but just accepting who he is and what he is now, he is still this incredible, hard-hitting hoss. And really, like the last two or three years, the only WWE matches that I watch are his, because his work in NXT, his work with Sheamus, it's exactly what I want from my wrestling. And the work with the IC title is, I'm really happy to see that. That's a championship that I always loved as a kid. And to see it now become this warrior, hard-hitting title, that's awesome. Love to see it.
That actually works kind of perfectly, because Gunther is my number three. So that's a perfect transition from fourth to three. But yeah, you're dead right. So like, it's often overstated, I think, by like, and I'm reticent to talk about like groups of fans in this kind of way, but from like WWE diehards will tell you that he's exactly what he was when he was in WXW and Progress and companies like this. And it's not true. There's definitely something, but he's not going out there and peeling people's chests open with chops as much as he used to. He's not quite as indomitable as he used to be. He's not quite the Godzilla of this realm who commands the ring to that degree. But the version of him that we're currently getting is very pleasantly surprising given the environment he's in. I think like when he came into the WWE system, him more than anyone else is the guy I think that a lot of us would have pointed at and gone, he's not going to fare well when he gets to a Raw or SmackDown. You know, this guy with the kind of 80s monster heel style body, which I think is great. Like, I think not everyone needs to look like Lex Luger. I think it's great to have diverse body types in pro wrestling, particularly for his style and it's a throwback and all of that fits together. But you look at that and then look at the person who was in charge of that company, and I guess who is kind of in charge of it again now, unfortunately, and think, yeah, he's not going to get it. He's going to be doing whatever in the 24/7 championship division by the end of the year. But no, he's cut through that. We had the warning sign when they changed the name at the start of last year, and there were various, the surname that they were going to choose tied him to something they didn't want to be tied to. It was all a bit of alarm belly, but no, he to me, he has become today's version. And this might sound like a ridiculous comparison, but I'll break it down. He's kind of today's version of what Bryan Danielson was in that company, in that they obviously wrestle completely different styles, but in terms of elevating that particular in-ring product above what is often a very sterile, like formulaic almost house style, and putting some craft into it and not completely diluting his own instincts and impulses, and being able to transcend those limitations that have hindered so many. Like, you get good matches in WWE very often, like every week. I'm not pooing on that. But it's of a certain style. These bangers with a capital Z, they're often a pure fireworks show, a big move buffet, trade bombs, blah, 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 kick out, kick out, kick out, super glossy production. Gunther's matches feel different, just like Bryan Danielson's did when he was in the company. He has these just unreal matches with Sheamus. Like, I was fortunate enough to be there in Cardiff for the first Sheamus match, and I could not, like, ooh, some of the things they were pulling out were like so anti-WWE.
Yeah,
it scarcely felt like the same company. And I get that feeling with him a lot. I think he still has that presence. He still hits as hard as can be allowed within that environment. And for someone who has to sit through Braun Strowman segments every week, I appreciate Gunther a lot. Maybe I've got him a position higher or two than I would have, because I appreciate him for being a contrast in that environment. And yes, if he was still the Walter, if this was 5 years ago, he'd probably be my number one, spoiler alert. But what a breath of fresh air he is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're letting him be himself, but then capping it off to a certain, like, you can do some of what you want to do, but we're going to just dilute it, like you said, is the perfect word. And to me, it's sort of like he's the Diet Coke to Coke Gunther is the Diet Coke. Walter was the Coke. Still pretty good. I still enjoy a Diet Coke. It's not the same. Not quite the same, but I'll take it. But the grittiness, the visceralness of his work, again, is exactly what I enjoy about wrestling. When it is dangerous and you feel slightly uncomfortable and there are people with bruises and scars on their chest, like as masochistic as that sounds, like that's, I love that. Much less do I like, you mentioned the Young Buck style, like I can get excited about that. I can enjoy it for what it is, but it doesn't hit me the same way as two guys just beating the shit out of each other, which is, that's his MO. Even if it is, we would change it now, beating to the stuffing out of you. We've modified it. There we go. So we have some overlap. We have two at least, because Okabayashi's up higher. My number three though is from Stardom, Himeka. It was a very unique Haas in the sense that she will beat you up. She's powerful. She's large, but she's also cute and charming and sweet, which is, you don't see that very often. Stan Hansen was never described as charming or sweet. But she just is, she shifts from her faces, especially because I did a whole article about her facial expressions, but you see her go from happy and smiley to vicious and snarling and then surprise. And she just has a lot of range, but within that range, there's a lot of Haas work. Her shoulder block is a thing of beauty and one of my favorite of the simple moves that are out there. And also bonus points, she has a very Haas nickname, like Big Hash. She's called Jumbo. So if you're not sure she's a Haas, just look at the name. You don't call someone Jumbo if they're not a Haas. Like, let's be real.
Is it? And the great match with one of your other picks, Michael, last year as well. A lot of fun. Yeah. She stands out on this, the Stardom roster. I mean, this isn't exactly an original point or whatever, but it's worth repeating. It should be extremely hard to stand out on that roster, given how diversely talented that group of wrestlers is. And yeah, here we are. I completely agree with everything you say. She's been, when I was, you know, as I've been getting more and more into Stardom over the past couple, years ago, really. But like, as she's broken through, she's someone who's been very, very easy to latch onto. She gives you something a little bit different. You read and hear a lot about the Bushiroadification of the Stardom main event style and all of that, and how, you know, certain main event layouts are maybe becoming a bit more in tune with New Japan's formats as, you know, that partnership or whatever continues. And I think there's some merit to that, you know, like a lot of the Shuri matches, you know, hitting a very high level, but are structured quite similarly. So it's nice to have wrestlers like Himeka and Micah there who bring something a little bit different and bring that Haas spirit to Joshi in general.
Yeah, and I think the environment that she's in helps kind of amplify that Haasness, because when she's, it's against Micah, that's Haas versus Haas crime. But otherwise, they're usually smaller wrestlers, faster wrestlers. So I think that plays at her Haas side. She's like significantly larger and taller than a lot of those women. And I like big wrestlers. There's something about that. And she brings that. Absolutely. We're now in the middle of the list here, and let's head to then your number two, Andy.
All right, so my number two is my favorite wrestler in my favorite promotion to just watch casually and without the energy of having to cover it at work. It's Kazusada Higuchi from DDT, the KOD Openweight Champion. I love this guy so much. So when you're 9 to 5 is thinking literally nothing about nothing but WWE and AEW and occasionally like a New Japan or an Impact, it's really refreshing to have a different promotion that gives you something, a completely different flavor of wrestling. DDT has been that for me for years, but I've been a Higuchi fan for even longer. He's always stood out to me going through, you know, some of the old DNA shows when they were on YouTube, and there were these rookie matches where it's basic, you know, fundamental stuff, not a whole lot of flash to it. But even then, here's this big bulky guy with the slick back hair and the strong jawline and the big build, obviously, you know, not the tallest guy in the world, but again, he stands out in this environment because of who he's facing off with and the smaller wrestlers he's facing. But even in that environment, he had this indomitable presence, like standing in the middle of the ring. This is my plot of land here and you're not going to move me. Just a real commanding dude, even in his formative years, even as a rookie, kind of projecting this presence that some wrestlers will never learn or never grasp. Real stoic badass guy, presenting the image of someone not to be messed with. It may be a bit of a lofty comparison, but screw it, I think he's a lofty wrestler. For me, that indomitableness, that's not a word, but you know what I mean, is almost reminiscent of Prime Walter in a way. He's a fearsome bloke you don't want to mess with, and he's grown and grown and grown over the years as well. He's leaned out a little bit, you know, physically, but he's still got these rock shoulders. He's still a broad guy, and he's still much bigger than most of the people he wrestles. He's got the great sumo influence stuff in the ring, real simple but effective moveset, but he's relatively athletic as well, of course, to keep up with your Yuki Uenos and Takeshitas and all these blokes. But I love that he uses something as simple as well as a brain claw as a finisher. It's one of those things that when I was a younger wrestling fan, I would have laughed at. I would have been like, you can't just squeeze someone's... What are you talking about? It's the Attitude Era. You can't squeeze someone's skull. What are you talking about? That doesn't work anymore. Get with the times. But obviously, as you become less reactionary and you watch a guy like Higuchi believably squeezing the life out of someone's head, it proves to me that the classics still work if you do them right and if you're the right person doing them. I've loved them as a singles wrestler, obviously. I loved Eruption so much. I'm still pissed that they're not really together anymore. Him and Sakaguchi were just the perfect badass tag team. Two destroyers, but Sakaguchi was like the precise scalpel with his strikes and submissions, and Higuchi was like a hammer with his blunt force. Not the biggest guy in the world, again, but he feels like the biggest guy in the world, and that's really what it's all about. And consistently having my favorite matches in Japan most years. Last year, I mean, the Takeshita match was my match of the year in any promotion. Took a long while for him to get to the top, to the point where I think, you know, it was almost a meme amongst DDT fans. Is he actually going to finally win this bloody belt and get over the hump? And now he's there, and it feels like the most natural and right thing in the world.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, if you are listening and you go, well, DDT, isn't that the dumb thing with all the comedy and the guys like pulling off their pants? It is, but it also has like these nasty, hard-hitting slugfests. And Higuchi is the king of that. First of all, thank you for mentioning him. I didn't put him on there. I feel dumb not doing so. I'm rearranging the list in my head, but you're totally right about all those things. And the claw, like you mentioned, it works because it's him. Like a lot of guys, if they're acting tough, they're playing a tough wrestler, you're like, what are you doing with clawing some, you know, holding someone with your claw? But he feels intimidating and bigger. And I'm pulling it up right now because I was like, how big is he? Because like you're right, he does feel big. He's 6'1", which is like 185 centimeters, and 105 kilograms, about 231 pounds. That's not huge. That is not huge. But that you wouldn't have guessed that. Like, I'm surprised looking at those numbers because of the way he carries himself, the way he just... The build too, it's similar to Okabayashi, that like big barrel chest. And the Walter comparison is good. He has slimmed down and he doesn't look as thick, but just like tighter and more muscular, but still quite a big man in many ways. So I'm glad you did that. We're at my number two, which is someone we've already mentioned and talked about from DDT. did some work at DDT, Okabayashi. So we talked a lot about him already. That is our crossover. If you don't take anything from this episode, please go watch some Okabayashi, go watch some Higuchi, and get back to me and tell me. If you don't like it, you don't. But if you like nasty, I'm uncomfortable watching this, it's so violent, those are the gentlemen to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love them in my day job, having the opportunity to maybe put more people on to that stuff as well. Mm-hmm. It's one of the perks of what we do, is even though the bulk of our coverage is WWE and AEW, if I have the opportunity to recommend, I don't know, Kazusada Higuchi versus Yuki Ueno for the other week, if I have that 1 minute opportunity to do that,
yes,
and like five people watch a video and then go and sign up for Wrestle Universe and do it, those are absolutely the guys who are going to help you change your mind. And yeah, man, like my journey through independent Japanese wrestling may have been nowhere near as fruitful without those guys, for sure.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we are at the end here. The big number one. I thought I could guess your number one, but you already told me it's not on there. So, Andy, where are you going? Your top five favorite wrestling.
Probably the most chaotic mainstream wrestler on planet Earth is my number one pick here. It's Brody King. So the great genre of hardcore punk is my favorite type of music, and Brody King wrestles like his band God's Hate sounds. Chaotic, he's bludgeonous, he's stomping this heavy monster of a man that has all the quickness you want from a modern big man. He's not like this lumbering stiff of a guy, meshed with the unreal primal brute strength. And I think primal is probably the best word to describe how Brody King wrestles, and it's probably why he speaks to me so much, to be honest. I call him the king of caveman style. I probably didn't come up with that, but I think it's entirely fitting. It is the equivalent of a guy just taking a gigantic dinosaur bone and clobbering you over the head until you can't get up anymore. His raw boned power is ridiculous, from launching guys around the ring to, from my view, the best in the industry, corner cannonball. He looks like he's absolutely killing people with that thing because he's such a big dude as well. He's not the most refined wrestler in the world, certainly, but I think that's what makes him so great to me. I always go back to the old Minoru Suzuki quote from his feud with John Moxley, where he talks about like developmental systems eliminating weaknesses in wrestlers, and you end up with this kind of wrestler that's like a 6 out of 10 in everything, and there's this perfectly spherical gray lump of trash, I think was the term he used.
Yeah.
Brody is 100% not that, because he works so chaotically and it's often a little bit messy, it creates this incredible spectacle. But while his style is very blunt, it's mostly throwing people or running into them, he's clearly incredibly skilled as well, because if you were doing that kind of thing where it looks so reckless, if you weren't skilled, you would be killing people. So, you know, there's clearly a lot more craft behind the cavemanery once you kind of start peeling it away. But he's just such a spectacle to me. I mean, he's got a great vibe. He's got the full body tattoos. He's really tall, of course. The House of Black have that kind of metal hardcore aesthetic that I always love. I don't care how much riddles come out your mouth. If you can convince me that you're a scary metal dude, I'm probably in. I'm really easily pleased. But yeah, man, he's just got this incredible vibe that meshes perfectly with his look and his style. And then again, he's got the cool backstory of being in hardcore bands and all of this stuff. The footage from him last year doing a stave dive in the middle of his Sound and Fury set is the most terrifying thing in the world. This just 6'6" guy jumping on some poor concert goers. And you go and look at some of his work as well. I mean, the Darby Allin singles matches are what most people will probably go to. They have incredible chemistry. You have the great visual spots. The one that caught on last year would be the sleeper hold, where he's dangling this little guy over the ring to eliminate him from the battle royal. And they have incredible chemistry. And it had, like, I mean, 99% of the planet wrestlers on the planet would look better than their average when they're wrestling Darby Allin, because he's an incredible defensive bumping wrestler. But beyond that as well, like Brody had this incredible singles match this year, last year, that I don't think a lot of people saw against Biff Busick, at the height of Biff's kind of like short, too short, unfortunately, comeback indie run, where he was having these crazy matches. It was in Circle Six, which is an interesting promotion, but it's on YouTube somewhere. It's just one of the most primal, just simple, uncomplicated, stiff, nasty, ugly ass matches I've seen in years and years. Love everything about Brody King. Kind of goes with everything I've been saying about, you know, not being the most complete package in the world. But that's the whole point. That's what makes people compelling to me. It's the balance of the strengths and the weaknesses. And yeah, it everything about this dude speaks to my tastes. And I there's very few wrestlers I enjoy watching more.
Oh, that's a good pick. 10 out of 10 on Haas look. 10 out of 10 Haas size. We talked about all these, like, oh, are they Haases? Kind of, depending. Brody is a big, intimidating animal. With the tattoos help, too.
Yeah.
He just is a scary, scary man. So that really helps all the things that he is and does. And I do remember the Darby Allin matches the most, I think in part because of the size difference, which really plays up Brody King's, like, you know, the difference is it's a bear facing like a raccoon or something. That would be insane to see that. And that the thing you're talking about where he's dangling him there, that is one of the most like lasting crystallizing images in my head of, it's like he's killed him. He has destroyed this man. He's killed them. And that is his style. He doesn't need to be refined. A Haas is a big train rumbling down. It doesn't need to be slick or smooth. It can just be a big, brutal machine or hammer. That's an excellent number one. My number one is someone you are very familiar with, Tomohiro Ishii. I know he is not a large man, and I was arguing with myself, should I put him on here? Because he's a short guy. Is he really a Haas? But if anybody acts like a Haas, works like a Haas, lives like, just breathes that, that's him. His style is just bulldozing, smashes you, slugs it out with everybody. When COVID hit and New Japan was kind of just not firing on all cylinders, not as electric as it was for years, the guy that I kept coming to anyway was Big Tom, because you can depend on him to give you violence. You can depend on him to give you this simple, to the point, beating you over the head, beating you over the chest. And he also takes hostile offense, the slugfest offense, well, and he sells it and he makes you care. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time, the king of the G1, Big Tom.
Yeah, absolutely my favorite wrestler of all time as well. The Shibata match from 2013 is my favorite match of all time as well. Mm. That kind of embodies everything that's great about this man. I mean, that match literally starts with the two of them sprinting into the middle of the ring and just colliding with each other. Yeah, so legitimately the only reason he's not number one on my list is because maybe I played too many mental gymnastics with defining this. But
same.
He's unreal. He's one of these guys who, yes, he does have something of a formula. And there are repeated spots and stuff, but the enduring power of the things he does is just undeniable. We're here in 2023. In 2022, he closed the year out with that ridiculous Chris Jericho singles match over in AEW. He's got that magical wrestling power about him where you always hear these reports about how, oh, he's in his mid-40s now, and he's banged up and he can't quite go like he used to. And then he just completely blows them away. He draws you into the struggle. He sells like nobody else, I don't think, in the entire sport. He doesn't just make you believe that, say, his arm is hurt, he gives the impression that it's about to fall out of his socket and that the only thing holding it there is like the taper over his shoulder or whatever. The one count kickouts are always perfectly timed. The fire ups, I am never not going to pop for somebody thinking they can forearm Big Tom in the face, and that gurn he gives them when he's firing out of the corner, as if he's just, he feels so affronted that someone would dare try and stand with him. He works as an underdog. He works on top. The greatest description I've ever heard of Big Tom is that he is the world's first underdog sympathetic bully heel. it's just a great way of encapsulating the man. And, you know, like 5'7" or whatever proves that you don't need to be a giant guy to work this style and make it work. Lord knows how much longer we've got a Big Tom at this level of his powers, but I'm going to enjoy it every single match that we do because he's a treasure and a gem and I love him.
I was going to make that same point because I've heard rumors of him either having one more G1 or not coming back, and that's kind of hard to imagine.
Yeah,
because he's always like one of the best parts of that tournament, and the G1 is all about putting all of yourself into every fight. And that's who he is. It doesn't matter if he has a chance to win the tournament. He's going to spend every drop of sweat and blood and fight you to the death. So I'm with you. I don't know how much longer it's going to happen. He's a guy that could be wrestling till he's 60 and kind of drag himself in there, or he just says, you know, I'm gonna go chill in a village and drink tea and just watch sunsets. I don't know. I don't know what's in his head, but you never know with wrestling. So enjoy it while you can, savor it. Woo! There we go. We did it. Two excellent lists. I gotta say, let's recap real quick. Andy did number 5, The Butcher. Number 4, Okabayashi. Number 3, Gunther. Number 2, Higuchi. Number 1, Brody King. So quick question, looking at that list, if you had to put Ishii in a match against one of those guys, just for your enjoyment, not for making money, where you go?
Oh, man. So he's already wrestled Gunther as Walter, so let's pull him out of there.
Fair.
Him and Yuji would be kind of, it'd be an interesting vibe, similar energies, but I'm gonna go for, oh my god, this is really tough. Ishii's just so good against everybody.
Did he wrestle Brody?
Let's go
King?
For Brody. If he has, I haven't seen it. That's the one I'm gonna go for because, like, Big Tom is like low-key really awesome when wrestling other horses. Moose is an interesting wrestler, but they had a match in New Japan on the American imprint. It was either last year or the year before. And it was low-key just brilliant watching Big Tom bumping around for this much larger man, which isn't a scenario that happens often in Japan. So I'm going to go for Brody, man. I'd love to see Tom like taking the cannonball in the corner and all that nonsense. It'd be a hoot.
Okay, I have good news for you. In 2021, in November, on a New Japan Strong show, Brody King was against Ishii. So,
wow,
something to go seek out or early present for you. There it is. It's real.
Yeah.
So my list was number 5, Chihiro Hashimoto. Number 4, Gunther. Number 3, Himeka. Number 2, Okabayashi. And number 1, Ishii. So we had quite a bit of overlap here. Hashimoto was on your honorable mentions. Gunther was your number 3. Okabayashi was your number 4. So we kind of flipped positions essentially there. And then I put Ishii number 1, but he's number 1, in, I think, truly in your heart. So I'll count that.
Yeah. I almost shouldn't put him on lists of any variety. Just exclude him because he's like S tier for me. Yeah, he's my favorite wrestler of all time. Can't say enough nice things.
Excellent. Where can folks hear you other than the Noob Japan episode about Big Tom?
So yeah, I work for Walk Culture. I've been there 6 years. I'm the channel manager. It's very fun. It's very exciting. We're on YouTube. You can find us there. We're on walkculture.com. We're on podcast channels. Anywhere you listen to audio, you can probably find us there. I do videos. I do a weekly, I do a daily news show Monday to Friday. I write stuff. I do occasional audio. That's where you can find the bulk of my wrestling work. It's, you know, primarily WWE, AEW focused because this is my full-time job. So you have to
give
the world what they're most interested in. But I'm always shoehorning little DDT things, little Stardom things, little Tokyo Joshi Pro things in there. Sneaking my hobby wrestling into my shoot job wrestling is my favorite tactic, and I'm going to keep doing that forever.
Excellent. Glad you're doing that. On my end, you can find Wrestle In Podcast just about everywhere. Our growing network includes Noob Japan, All Elite Listening, Ocean Cyclone Show, Tokyo Joshi Freedom Fighters, Puro Vision, and Into the Wrestleverse. Rate, review, follow, share, join us. It's getting bigger. It's getting better. I am at Ryan Dilbert on Twitter. You can listen to me on this show every other week. And my writings are on wrestlein.com. Just bookmark it, read mine, read other people's good stuff on there all the time. And I do a Tokyo Joshi Substack called Are You Princess? Reviews of just about every show. Andy, thanks so much for coming on. Loved the topic. Loved getting educated on Aberdeen. Glad to have you, man.
Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure. Any chance I have to just talk about my favorite stuff that doesn't really always fit into the sphere of day-to-day coverage is an absolute joy. And horses are like my favorite style of wrestler. So this was wonderful.
Yes, agreed. And everyone, thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.